By this time tomorrow, I might be the President of the United States, or Mr. Jackson might be President of the United States.
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold and written by Gene Holloway. Mr. President at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Today's Mr. President drama will begin in just a moment. But first, a word about our purpose in presenting this series. To Americans, there are no more stirring stories in the world than the stories of the lives of the men who became presidents of the United States. Their deeds are direction pointers for the American mind, sources of inspiration and courage to young and old alike. People today are more interested than ever to know the intimate, interesting, and inspiring facts about the lives of their presidents. Now, for the first time in radio history, the American Broadcasting Company takes listeners behind the White House reception rooms and ballrooms, glittering with gold braid and famous personalities, into the privacy of the breakfast room and the study, where presidents are shown as individuals, with human doubts, laughter, love, and faith. See if you can name the president upon whom this episode is based.
The popular election was over, and no one was quite sure who was to be the man of the hour. Four men had run for the office of president and had deadlocked the Electoral College. That meant the House of Representatives had to choose the president from the three highest candidates. Listen closely and see if you can tell who the candidate was who won the election. And far from the scene of activity, the president's 90-year-old father sat waiting for news.
Who's that? Who's that? Any news? Is there any news, I say?
No, not yet. The election has to go to the House of Representatives. Clay's out of it now. It's between Crawford, Jackson, and your son.
Never thought he'd make it, but he's going to. You watch and see. I am going to live to see my son President of the United States. What did they say about him in today's papers?
Not much in today. Just some report that a newspaper in Philadelphia said he never wears a waistcoat or a cravat. And that he goes to church in his bare feet.
That's Philadelphia for you. If memory doesn't fail me, they said I went without more things than that. If a Philadelphia newspaper doesn't like you, they certainly make no bones about it.
You really think he's going to be elected, do you?
Yes, I do. He's my son. Don't you forget that for one minute. He's my son.
Ready, dear.
Oh, thank you, Louise. I was just sitting here thinking about my father.
You look tired.
I am tired. There were so many people here today. You know, the circumstances are different for me than for either of the other candidates.
In what way, dear?
Well, I have given most of the years of my life to public service. If I lose the election, that is equivalent to a vote of censure against those years of service.
I don't think you should look at it that way. Whether you're elected president or not, you've served your country faithfully and well. My dear, you've endured many defeats in your life. I'm confident if this should be a defeat, you'll know how to meet it.
Yes, but...
Haven't you said to me so many, many times, if I'm able to bear success, I must be tempted to endure defeat.
I have said it, and I was right when I said it. I'm acting like a sulky schoolboy, aren't I? You should give me a sound rapping across my knuckles.
Oh, my goodness, I've forgotten all about dinner. Come on before it's ruined. Didn't you tell me Mr. Webster was to stop by after supper?
Yes, he is.
Well, then, we must hurry.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stormy night out, Daniel. I wasn't sure you'd come.
I don't think a blizzard could have kept me in tonight. There's work to be done, neighbor. And you can be sure our opponents are gathered in living rooms throughout the city with little regard for the weather.
I don't doubt it.
There's a drama to this whole affair that delights me. Just think, out there across town, men are sitting as we are laying plans. All the great political minds in the East are busy with one thought. How shall we get our man into office? And who of us all is going to prove the wisest? Not one man living knows.
So, is the President of the United States to be elected because of wits or of merits, Mr. Webster?
I hope because of both. And it will be if the House of Representatives elects you.
I don't like politics. A man should win or lose on his merits.
You are speaking as an idealist. The idealist within me agrees with you. But the politician within me warns that it takes more than ideals to win an election. Now, to get down to business, it boils down to this. The man you have to beat is Jackson.
Jackson won the popular vote.
Yes, but he hasn't won the election yet. Not by a long shot, he hasn't. Crawford, as you know, has had a paralytic stroke. I'm sure he's out of it. Clay lost out by the vote of the Electoral College. It's between you and Jackson. But the key man to the whole election is Clay.
You're convinced of that, too, are you, Daniel?
Yes. Clay controls several votes in the House. Those votes could swing the election either way.
You know, Clay and I have never been very close friends. He doesn't like me.
Well, I wouldn't say that he was overly fond of you, no, but I think he dislikes Jackson more than he dislikes you.
And I suppose the Jackson supporters are doing their best to win him over.
They are indeed. But Clay will choose his own man. He's a man of integrity, and he'll choose his own man. He's fully aware of his importance in this election. Make no mistake about that. Now then, he wants to come and see you tomorrow evening.
He does?
Yes. I think he wants to acquaint himself a little better with your policies.
I see, but Daniel, tomorrow is the Sabbath.
I know, but time grows short now, and this conference must not be delayed. I'm sure the good Lord will understand.
Well, I'm not going to try to sell myself to Clay. I can only tell him what I believe and what my intentions are toward the office.
Whatever you think wise, neighbor. But let me caution you once more that this man can win or lose the election for him.
I'll remember. Come in before the fire, Mr. Clay. I'm happy indeed to have this opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you. I'm sorry to disturb you on this day, but things are moving so rapidly toward the election that it seemed imperative.
I understand, sir. I think you'll find that chair drawn up to the fire quite comfortable, which is something I can't say for all my wife's chairs.
Yes, women are usually more interested in the appearance of the furniture than the comfort. I wanted to talk to you about the election.
Yes, I know.
I've been very much courted by the candidates the last few days. That is, by every candidate except you. I've been astounded to hear what a sudden fount of wisdom, what a peer among leaders, what a faultless and great man I've become. In fact, if I were all that I've been told I am, my magnificence would be practically overwhelming.
Well, I'm afraid I have no such words for you, Mr. Clay.
I know how much respect you have for the truth. I don't expect any such compliments from you. What I do want to know is, what are your plans for the presidency?
That's a hard question to answer. You know my ideas and my ideals. They've certainly been exposed to public view often enough. I want to do the best I can for the country. I want developments along every possible line, the resources of the country and the resources of the people. I don't want to be responsible to any party or to any individuals except the people of the nation as a whole.
There's been some activity among the other candidates. I understand they've been promising certain jobs to their supporters. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not going to bribe my way into the office. As far as I'm concerned, any competent man who may now hold office can continue to hold that office, no matter what his politics. I will never remove a man from office because his views do not coincide with mine. And I will not put a man in office whose sole recommendation is that his views do coincide with mine.
I see.
Mr. Clay, you can support me or not as you like. I have nothing to offer you in case you do, and I would rather you didn't support me unless you felt I was the man for the office.
You're an independent man, sir. You always have been. I haven't always seen eye to eye with you, but I have always respected you. I'm going to give you my support.
Thank you, Mr. Clay. Thank you very much.
Ah, Mr. Webster.
Oh, Mr. Spence, how are you today, sir?
Well, Mr. Webster, well, and yourself?
Couldn't be better.
I suppose you're optimistic about the chances of your candidate now that Mr. Clay has come out for him.
Well, I'm certainly more optimistic than I was. How do you feel about the chances of your candidate, Mr. Spence?
Oh, very good, Mr. Webster, very good indeed. And, incidentally, on that very subject, there's quite an interesting article in tonight's paper. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, what a shame. I don't have it with me. But it says that Clay has given his support to your candidate in exchange for the office of Secretary of State.
That is a lie.
Well, of course it may be. I only know what I read in the papers. That's all a lot of people know.
That is a deliberate attempt to blacken the reputation of two men who would never stoop to such a trick.
Really? Well, all I know is that's what it says in the paper, Mr. Webster. That's what it says in the paper. Now, how do you feel about the chances of your candidate, huh?
This is beyond all endurance.
No, my dear, don't let it upset you.
But it's such an underhanded, low, mean, shabby thing to do. They know that Clay would never make such a request, and that I would never grant such a request.
Everyone knows that.
No, the people know, don't know it. The people who don't know either one of us may well read it and believe it. And this infamous article also says that Mr. Clay went to the other candidate with the same offer and was rejected, and that's why he came to me. They give no quarter in politics, do they? What do they care if they blacken a man's life as long as they win an election?
I wonder who that is. Are you expecting anyone, dear?
No. Wedgie, Mr. Clay bitterly regrets giving his support to me.
Well, good evening, Mr. Clay. We were just speaking of
Mr. you. Mr. Clay, I can't tell you how much I regret...
You've seen the papers then, huh?
Yes, I've seen them.
Well, now the fight begins. They think they have us for the throat, but you're going to win this election, Mr. President. No matter what mud they throw at either one of us, you're going to win it.
You think we can now?
We can, and we're going to. Mud washes out. Don't forget that, Mr. President.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
There's an old saying that you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. Unfortunately, many people do judge their reading matter that way and are often disappointed. They miss out on books they'd really enjoy reading. This holds true when it comes to judging people, too. Many of us evaluate a person by his looks or judge him on the basis of his religion or origin. Of course, people who do this often hurt themselves. For the person they have judged with prejudice might have turned out to be a good friend and neighbor. That's why we should judge our neighbors by the character of their lives alone, and not on the basis of their religion or race. Remember, group antagonisms divide our country, but they can be isolated and quarantined. So starting now, today, help unite America by speaking up wherever you are, against prejudice and for understanding. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Well, have you guessed who the candidate for office was when all this happened? It really did happen, you know, so listen closely. The fight for the office of President of the United States went on. And now everybody had their coats off and were working at fever pitch. The opposition was busy in their corner.
Now, I'm confident that if we can stop our opponent for one ballot, we can defeat him. We know that Jackson can win the election then because there'll be a break in the Maryland delegation after the first ballot.
Are you sure?
I'm confident of it. Now, here's what we've got to do. The New York delegation will be close, and I think we can bring about a tie with New York, which will keep the vote of that state from being cast. That's the way we can head off an election on the first ballot.
Well, how are you going to tie New York?
I think Van Rensselaer is our man.
Van Rensselaer?
Yes. To begin with, he was Alexander Hamilton's brother-in-law, which makes him automatically the enemy of our opponent and his whole family.
Well, that should work in our favor.
I've been doing a lot of thinking about him. I'm arranging to take a furnished house with Van Rensselaer for the session. And I'm going to see that he's surrounded with our supporters.
Yes, the opposition was busy in their corner, and up in New England, the 90-year-old father waited anxiously for the news.
It's the waiting that's the hardest. I know.
If anyone knows, I know that. I remember how my wife said to me, "Now, there's no good in getting excited. We'll know in due time." The excitement grows inside you, and you can't eat, and you can't sleep, and your voice trembles, and your hand trembles, and your knees tremble. I guess it's your knees tremble most of all. And then the word comes. And it's the proudest and the most humble moment of your life. And you stand there saying the most magnificent words a man could say. "I do solemnly swear to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States." There aren't many men who can stand up there before the whole nation and say those words. But I pray God that my son will. And then I can close my eyes and sleep in peace.
Now, dear, you aren't eating a thing.
Oh, I'm sorry, Louise. My mind just doesn't seem to be on food.
You aren't eating a thing either, Daniel.
Well, I'll eat when it's all over.
Now, see here. You both need nourishment. I want you to eat.
I don't like this situation with Van Rensselaer. I don't like it at all. They think they're going to tie up the New York delegation with his vote.
With Van Rensselaer living in a house surrounded by our enemies, I don't think there's much we can do about his vote.
Well, I'm going to talk to Clay about him. Between the two of us, there ought to be some way we can get to that old Dutchman. There must be some way.
Mr. Van Rensselaer, have you picked your candidate?
Yeah, I have thought it all out, and I'm going to vote for Andrew Jackson.
Good. I had a feeling Jackson was going to be your man, Mr. Van Rensselaer. I knew you were a man of judgment and discrimination the first time I heard you talk about the issues involved.
Yeah, Jackson is the man. He will make a fine president. I have studied all the candidates very, very carefully, and Jackson is the man. For a while, I thought of Mr. Crawford, but the other candidate I never liked. Him I would never vote for. Never under any circumstances, never.
Well, tomorrow's the big day, isn't it? Tomorrow you vote for the President of the United States.
Yeah, in after years I will be able to say I helped elect Andrew Jackson to the office of President.
Dear, it's so late. You must get some rest.
Do you know what that clock is saying? Jackson, Jackson, Jackson.
Oh, you must stop thinking about it.
How can I stop thinking about it? By this time tomorrow, I might be the President of the United States, or Mr. Jackson might be President of the United States.
Suppose you do lose. Do you know what you're going to do?
No, I don't.
You're going right on serving the country in some other capacity.
Yes, I suppose I will. But I want to serve in this office. When I was 7, I watched the smoke of the first battle for American independence rising in the sky. I heard the sound of the guns, and something in my own heart took fire and blazed, and I looked up at that smoke and thought, I'll fight too someday. Someday I'll fight out in front. I'll stand out there with the guns blazing all around me so that all men can see how I love my country and what I'll do for her. Well, there are no firing lines now. Thank God for that. But there are horizons to be captured. There are buildings to be built. There is the never-ending war to be fought against those who would check our growth through selfish interests. America is an ideal. An ideal of freedom and liberty and honor and knowledge. And I want to stand out in front, leading the battle to keep those ideals.
I believe you will stand out in front. I believe you're going to win.
You know, I used to watch my father. I used to watch him and think, someday I'll stand where you stand now. I am your son. I have your blood in my veins, your strength in my sinews, your spirit in my heart. And now my father is 90, and he's watching from Massachusetts to see if I do have his strength and his spirit. Oh, Louise, I want to win that election. I want to win that election.
Should be coming in any minute now.
You think we can change his mind at the last moment like this?
If the two of us can't out-talk Spence and the rest of the opposition, then we might as well get out of politics.
But we're tackling a Dutchman. It isn't easy to change a Dutchman when he's made up his mind.
Shh. There he is. Come on. Mr. Van Rensselaer, I believe?
Yeah, my name is Van Rensselaer.
My name is Webster, Daniel Webster, and this is my friend, Henry Clay.
How do you do, Mr. Webster? Mr. Clay, I have heard of both of you gentlemen, of course.
We wondered if we might have a word with you.
Yes, of course.
Come right into the speaker's room, Mr. Van Rensselaer.
Do you know, Mr. Van Rensselaer, I've been anxious to meet you for some time. I've heard such interesting tales about the wisdom of your decisions on various occasions.
Yeah? Well, I try to be as wise as I can about things. Like we all do.
You know, you were a man of great influence in this country, Mr. Van Rensselaer.
Yeah?
Yeah, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Oh, yes, indeed, Mr. Van Rensselaer. A man of property and position such as you can't help but be an influence in the country.
We know that you take this as a great responsibility and that you watch all your actions very carefully, knowing how you can change the course of history.
History? Yeah?
For instance, Mr. Van Rensselaer, this morning, by your vote, you may change the pages of history.
I am not the only one voting, Mr. Webster.
Well, let me tell you why you may change the pages of history. If you vote for Mr. Jackson this morning, you will tie the vote of New York State. This means the House will fail to elect a president. Do you realize what can happen then?
There will be chaos, disorder in the land, disorganization of government. You have large estates. They may be affected. Well, I'm not going to say you will actually lose them, but on the other hand, who can say what the outcome might be?
My estates might be affected.
If a president is not elected this morning, there is no telling what may be affected.
You'd better not vote for Mr. Jackson, Mr. Van Rensselaer.
But I like Mr. Jackson.
Remember, chaos.
Disorganization of government.
Your estates.
I remember. Gee, I'd better go in now.
You think over what we've said, Mr. Van Rensselaer. I know a man of your wisdom will very quickly see what man he should vote for.
Almighty God, I pray to you to guide me. As I sit here at my desk, about to make this word that may change a page of history, I beg you to guide me. Who shall I vote for? Who shall I vote for? Amen. What is this ticket on my desk? It says me. Oh, but that is the name of the man I was never going to vote for. Well, I must vote for him anyhow. It must be the will of God. Otherwise, why would the ticket be there? Yeah, well, now at last I know the will of God in this matter.
The House will now vote for the office of President of the United States. The candidates are as follows: William H. Crawford, Andrew Jackson.
He's elected, sir. He's elected. Your son is President of the United States.
President of the United States. Almighty God, I thank thee for thy merciful goodness. I will write him a letter at once. I shall write to him at once. I have the paper all laid out waiting for this hour. My dear son, never did I feel so much solemnity as upon this occasion.
The multitude of my thoughts God. And the intensity of my feelings are too much for a mind like mine in its 90th year. May the blessing of God Almighty continue to protect you to the end of your life, as it has heretofore protected you in so remarkable a manner from your cradle. I offer the same prayer for your lady and your family, and am your affectionate father.
Oh, that's a lovely letter. I knew he'd be proud.
I can hardly believe it, Louise. I can hardly believe it.
Daniel said that Mr. Van Rensselaer's vote saved the day for you.
Now, I don't know how they ever managed to get his vote, but however they did it, Mr. Webster, Mr. Clay, Mr. Van Rensselaer, and most of all, the good God that watches and helps us, have my everlasting gratitude.
Welcome to history, Mr. President.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you. Well, you've probably figured out by now who the president was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
One of the definitions Webster gives to the word dynamic is of or pertaining to power. As an adjective, dynamic perfectly describes Walter Winchell, one of the country's most powerful reporters of the news. Winchell's dynamic news delivery has made him a favorite with millions, from high-ranking statesmen and other leaders down to the man in the street. For Winchell not only tells the facts about the news, he gets behind the news to bring you startling exposés on it. So, for important news on the headline events of the week, plus extraordinary exposés and exclusives on domestic and foreign events that are his trademarks, hear Walter Winchell tonight over most of these same ABC stations. Now, back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
My dear father, I am writing to tell you that today I took the oath of office of President of the United States. And as I stood there, I could feel your presence beside me. And I could hear your voice saying the oath. I hope with all my heart that I can be as fine a president as you were. With gratitude for all the things you have taught me, and with my everlasting devotion, I sign myself your devoted son, John Quincy Adams. Be with us again next week, won't you, and listen to another exciting story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Goodbye.
Edward Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of The Red Danube, starring Walter Pidgeon, Ethel Barrymore, and Peter Lawford. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. It was produced and directed by Dick Woolen. Today's story was based on incidents in the life of President John Quincy Adams.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.